Good evening, Practice Quantus. I'm going to read a story that I've written several times. Once I wrote it very short and it got published in an anthology at USC. Then I wrote it another time and I read it to an audience during my experience in a seminar with Penn West. A program, 6-month program designed to what they considered or what we were called emerging authors. The only thing that experience did is made me realize how incomplete my literary works were, and I never did go for the publishing of a book. However, now perhaps I can get it published in podcasts, and it may be a good, clean story, one that I can be proud of. It's called The Bean Contest in La Escuela Zavala. All of Mama's children, all 12 of us, spoke English, yet English would always remain our second language. It was always easier to chat and play, primarily with Spanish-speaking students whose parents spoke little or no English. When we spoke Spanish, we were, actually free, more animated, spontaneous, and able to describe our emotional life. You could say that we were being ourselves. While English increasingly became our public language. And as far as some of the other non-English speakers, it was really associated with showing off. It would bring joy to the teachers because it made them feel they were doing a great job. But it would bring some resentment from classmates who remained permanently rooted in the Mexicanized Spanish. Zavala school teachers and administrators made distinctions. The eager learning students of English, mainly those of us that brought English speaking experience to the school, became the shining lights, the smart ones, while the others were English retarded, who demonstrated a potential and finally were destined for the cotton fields and the other forms of menial labor, who were dropouts or pullouts before the sixth grade. The first grade for me was a wonderful, enriching experience for those because we were able to make smooth transition and quickly learn English and fell in love with books. So we were able to get used to also to our English names. My brother Benito became Benny before going to school. So when he became Ben in school, he was able to make a miraculous transition. My sister Maria del Carmen became plain Carmen, and she, which is what she was being called at home. So it was pretty good for her. I became a Frank. I had never been called Frank by anyone before that. I had always been known as Kiko. And it wasn't until the fourth grade, actually, that the name Frank sounded good. Actually, because the name Frank had been a rage thanks to my paisano, Frank Sinatra. So that when Irma Saldana gave me her school picture in the fourth grade and wrote, "To Frank, love, Irma," I became able to enjoy my public name. It was amazing the freedom that teachers took and given us Anglo names, and how our identities became mixed and confused as a result. My sister Juanita, who followed me to school in 1940, joined first grade with Miss Herrera. She became a Janie. She hated to begin with being called Juana because she was always being teased by those that knew how to sing a Spanish rhyme that goes like this. Juana, Juana, la marrana, se cayó en el soquetal. Vino zapatero, no la pudo levantar. Jane, Jane, the pig, fell into a puddle of mud. The cobbler came and couldn't pick her up. So when Juanita started reading Dick and Jane stories, she fell madly in love with reading and could easily identify with Jane. My sister Petra, a few years later, when Mama's Martinez children in her school became Patsy, which she loved also immediately because the name Petra had a harsh-sounding name. And if I'm not mistaken, it is harsh because think it means rock. However, at home, she remained a Petra and associated the name used when being admonished by our parents. Robert, my oldest brother, my first Martinez brother, he was always happy with the name Robert. So he just didn't like school at all, no matter what. Our second Martinez brother, Jesus, well, he made a good adjustment also. He was deliriously happy to get rid of his Spanish name, which was bound to create a heavy cross to bear. Jesse, whoopee! The notorious bandit, Jesse James, he didn't have to spend his life in a futile attempt to be the perfect savior. Throughout our Zavala school experience, we basically were divided into four groups. The fast-learning English-speaking elite, who associated the language with acceptance by society at large. Those of us with limited English vocabularies were eager to learn more and gained equal status. The ones who learned quite a bit of English in spite of their resistance, and then those who eventually disappeared from the school environment to enter the bliss of the cotton fields and remain permanently rooted in the warmth of the Spanish language of their parents and forefathers. Those who stayed in school for the full term each year became more transformed. Miguel Arredondo became Mike. Leopoldo Mendez became Lee. Alfredo Lopez became a Fred, Freddy. Roberto Flores easily became a Bobby. Teresas became Therese, and Socorros became Hope. And so forth. So in this novel experience involving the arbitrary changing of our name, some became more victimized than others. Teófilo Hernández, for example, whose first name actually means lover of God, remained a Teófilo because it defied translation. What could the teachers call him? Other than Teófilo, and he had been corralled anyway at age nine to start school in the first grade with Miss Herrera. He was taller and larger. He also had buck teeth, which he kept exposed with a permanent grin of embarrassment from being among smaller kids. Miss Herrera even gave him a larger chair. He got the nickname Feo, Teófilo Feo, which means ugly. He adapted to the situation with tolerance and patience. And though he learned English well enough to write and read, he never volunteered to read aloud or was heard speaking Spanish voluntarily. Another student with little potential in the world of English language was Mucio Morales. His first name means muse. We kids that actually were smart-ass little Mexicans who were rapidly sprouting our English woven wings, nicknamed him Sucio, which means dirty, the cruelty of children. Mucio was shy and timid and never understood those of us who believed in that cruelty was a criteria for adulthood. He, like a real Teofilo, lover of God, was obedient. When the parents of the Spanish speakers, primarily Spanish speakers, decided a month before school was over to take them to the fields to work, they'd go without complaining, and even return a month late, darker, taller, and usually with very short hair, ready to be ridiculed because of their untranslatable names and for being pelones, because it was customary to cut their hair down to the scalp using the same shears that were used for sheep before returning to the city. It was part of the Travis County lice extermination program. By the time Ms. Herrera's fall class of 38 reached the sixth grade, our distinctions language-wise had sharpened. However, when we were walking in the hallways or playing in the schoolyard, we spoke Spanish, or a mixture of English and Spanish, and the school staff always felt they had failed at keeping us from speaking Spanish. They didn't know asking us to stop using Spanish was like asking us to stop breathing. And when we spoke Spanish, that we were declaring our freedom from the eyes of Texas that were too much upon us. Those of us who spoke English most of the time were taunted, actually, by those who staunchly remained loyal to Mexicanos de la Mera Mata, Mexicans from the roots, who were not about to be turned into Anglophiles. They bore their punishment for speaking Spanish as a badge of courage and enjoyed being able to anger teachers who went crazy when they heard Spanish in the classroom, as if certain bad things were being said about them. It was fear of the unknown, and perhaps down deep inside it made them feel ignorant. Many of the teachers were so focused on teaching us subject matters, most of them, in fact, they overlooked bits of Spanish that they heard us speaking in class. But some always found ways to punish us. Students who uttered Spanish words were mostly made to write on the board 20 times, "I will not speak Spanish in class." And if they showed no remorse, like Teofilo, who always had a grin on his face and would always turn and face the class after he would finish his punishment, were able to sit up in the corner, or were able to sit in the corner donning a dunce hat with a card around their neck that said, "We'll speak no Spanish." Those teachers felt justified that they were doing this out of concern, convinced that if we spoke English every hour and minute and second that we were in Zavala, by the time that we entered the world of work or made a miraculous transition to Allen Junior High, we'd be prepared to compete. No one could argue against that. By the time we entered the sixth grade, Spanish had been successfully banned from the classroom, and many, primarily Spanish-speaking students, had already found full-time jobs in the fields. But the principals, Mr. Wilbur, and his teaching staff still felt chagrin when they heard Spanish in the halls and the schoolyard, and felt compelled to yell, "Speak English! You're in America now!" Which really mystified us, since none of us doubted for a minute that we were in America. Since we were going to be graduating to the seventh grade, they thought they could find some way to fully prepare us to be 100% English speakers. So they decided to start a game that had motivation that involved rewards. Knowing how much Mexicans love beans, they filled empty Bull Durham tobacco bags with an equal amount of beans. And the rule of the game was that whenever we heard one of our sixth grade classmates speaking Spanish in the halls or in the playground, we'd collect a bean from them, so that by the end of the week, those of us with the most beans had several red, white, and blue stars placed on a posted piece of paper up on the wall, so that by the end of the contest, the ones with the largest totals would get to ride in a U.S. Jeep to an airbase nearby. At first, those who remained primary Spanish speakers gave their beans away gladly, or at least on the surface with a gracious sense of humor. But soon, the division between us, which prior to that had silently been endured, became manifested. Those of us who remained fairly Mexicanized began to realize that our rich Spanish vocabulary somehow meant that we were inferior. The English-speaking bean hoarders, who were becoming first-generation coconuts, also paid a price by having to listen to the taunting of the students who had called us engabachados, meaning anglicized. I became a middle-of-the-roader. At first, I simply kept all my beans to myself, actually, enjoying the novelty of having a small bag of beans that smelled like tobacco, which, incidentally, I would get hooked on 3 or 4 months ahead from then. But when I was with the Spanish speakers, I would speak Spanish, giving them a chance to collect beans, and often wondered why they didn't call me out for being a phony. And when I hung out with my sister Carmen and her friends, I spoke Spanish. But my sister Carmen admonished me. She's the one that called me a phony. Kiko, you're doing this on purpose. Heck, you hardly ever speak Spanish at home. ¿Qué te importa? I told her. Really made her angry. She collected beans from him and from me and called me a phony again. And I knew that Mama would hear about it, and that I would get a gentle reminder from her. Kiko, no seas así. You know that you're in school to learn all the English possible. Neither Carmen nor Mama knew how much I needed approval from my Spanish-speaking classmates. Teofilo also found a way to enjoy the bean contest. He simply came to school each day with a new bunch of beans from the family pantry and passed them out willingly as he used long sentences in Spanish. His family had recently bought a 100-pound sack of beans to be ready and have it on hand when they left for the cotton fields. Michael Redondo and Jesse Salas extorted beans from the weak and frightened, and from Teofilo, whether they were caught speaking Spanish or not. They pulled them and took them home to cook, and the next day they showed off their delicious bean tacos, burritos, actually, and made fun of Irma Salas, whose father was an insurance salesman, and Dolores Duran, whose father had a grocery store, because they brought bologna sandwiches to school with a pickle and fresh white bread and a neat bag, a brand-new bag every day with a apple in it. These girls were certainly envy on our part. Hector Lopez, a future agriculturalist, got the bright idea of planting some beans on the south side of the building, inspired, no doubt, by the story Jack and the Beanstalk, thinking that he'd soon have a large cash crop. Early in the third week, the contest, my sister and Irma were in a furious neck-to-neck struggle to win, and always hanging around with the Spanish speakers so they could temporarily shun their past and the students who were flattered by their attention. Unfortunately, fights and arguments began to erupt in the halls or in the playground. Mike Calizondo, for example, determined to have as much fun from the contest as possible, shouted at Lee, "I heard you, I heard you, I heard you say ball in Spanish. Mentiras!" That's a lie. "Yeah, you said mentiras too." "Yeah, but you said mentiras also." "Yeah, but you said mentiras twice." And Lee got angry and frustrated and poured the beans threw them at Mike in his face, provoking him into a fight. And just as Lee got close enough, Mike was ready and sass, a right hook to Lee's jaw. "Cabrón, le voy a decir mis manos que me pegaste. You go, I'm going to tell my brothers that you hit me," Lee shouted as he walked away crying. "Yeah, well, go ahead. You better tell him to bring an army," Mike would say, who was already brave enough to become a U.S. Marine. The bean contest, the teachers realized, had been ill-conceived because it not only caused conflicts, we had been fine-tuning our ears to Spanish. They decided to confiscate the bean bags, leaving Carmen and Irma disappointed and leaving many of us wondering what it had been all about to begin with. Carmen complained on the way home. "It wasn't fair. They should have given me and Irma the ride anyway. It's not our fault the boys refused to cooperate." Several days later, when the plants in the south side of the building were beginning to thrive, Mr. Wilbur ordered the janitor to hold them down, dashing dreams of Jack and the Beanstalk forever at Zavala Elementary School.